Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, I nailed the wine tonight. It might not taste good. All right, I'll take the might off. It does not taste good, but I nailed the wine tonight.
Oh, you did. It is called Lab of Portugal, and this one I can get because we will be talking about the documentary Pick of the Litter about a bunch of labs.
That's our, I guess, solo documentary of the week. We're going to talk about five films, our biggest one of the week. You didn't see. You didn't see the one that's opening on more than 4,000 screens.
It
called
was a daytime screening. Who screens a horror movie in the daytime?
I wouldn't put the horror tag on The Predator.
All right, what is it?
Did you see Predator in 1987?
No, I did not.
Starring Arnold and Carl Weathers.
Nope.
And Jesse the Mind Ventura.
Nope. Did not see it.
It also starred a man named Shane Black as Hawkins, a very minor character who was one of the first to die. Spoilers, but you know what? The movie came out in 87, so you've had your chance. Shane Black went on to write some pretty good movies. He directed an Iron Man movie.
Oh.
He wrote and directed The Nice Guys.
Wow.
Remember The Nice Guys?
Yeah,
Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, that was a good little movie.
Well, he's come back and co-wrote and directed The Predator. Not to be confused with Predator. Predator 2, Predators, Alien vs. Predator, and there was a second one in there. So that's The Predator. It's not a remake. Technically, it's a follow-on because they reference the first two Predator movies. But it might as well just be a hashtag of just thrown together nonsense. I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody the Predator is not good. It's going to win the weekend. It'll make the most money. It'll beat Crazy Rich Asians. It'll beat Peppermint.
That's always such a shame. I hate when these types of films like automatically win the weekend, even when they're not good.
Well, there are, and I understand why, people with sentimental attachment to Predator. I mean, it's young Arnold Schwarzenegger in 87, and it's just him versus an alien in the jungle. And once again, we start in the jungle. We're in the Mexican jungle, where Marine Sniper, played by Boyd Holbrook. I remember Boyd Holbrook from, he was the really bad guy in Logan.
Oh.
If you remember Logan.
Mm-hmm.
Here he plays a Marine Sniper, and he runs right into the Predator. Still looks like the same guy. Dreadlocks, face that opens up, a mandible that expands, and bad things start to happen. Where it goes off the rails is Quinn. His name's Quinn McKenna. They throw him in prison, in military prison, because he's probably going to say the word alien, and we can't have that. We can't have that. You know who can't have that? Your boy, Sterling K. Brown. Cannot have that.
He's had a busy year.
He even has a villainous name, Traeger. Traeger even sounds like, if you had to pick the villain, I'd pick the guy named Traeger. Traeger's like, he's in charge of the Predator Department. And they're not nice guys. If they think you know too much or have no more use for you, they're going to kill you. Even if you're just Olivia Munn. Even if you're an evolutionary biologist, played by Olivia Munn, who is invited in to talk Predator business, and they feel like they no longer need you, they're going to try to kill you. So Quinn and his ad hoc, I don't know, grab bag new crewmates who are psychos and criminals that he meets on the prison bus, including Keegan-Michael Key and Trevante Rhodes. We remember him from Moonlight. And Thomas Jane. He was the Punisher. He was also in Deep Blue Sea. So we know these guys. They're going to become his new crewmates to take on the Predator. The Predator is actually after Quinn McKenna's young son, Jacob Tremblay. Ya boy!
Oh, I love Jacob Tremblay. Tremblay.
We're talking Room here. Not The Room, but Room. Little Jacob Tremblay, he is autistic. He has Asperger's syndrome. But I've never really seen this done before. Shane Black does something with it. He makes it, I don't know if he's exploiting autism for plot points or if he's really saying these kids are special. Some of them are savants. This kid, Rory McKenna, deciphers alien in about a half hour. He's that good. He can just decipher alien. This film is just awful. It's disgustingly awful.
I was about to
awful.
Say, you are giving a whole lot of time and explanation to a film that you did not like.
But
and
that
I can
most
honestly,
people will see. I'm echoing
I know,
your
but I can
argument.
I know, but I can honestly say I still have absolutely zero idea what Predator is about, what The Predator is about. And just like I did not see the first so,
well,
I'm
going in here assuming that people know what Predator is. Like, see, most people
I
know what it is.
I don't know. I don't think necessarily. I think only those who have seen it.
An alien from another world. We don't know where it is. From another world. Comes to Earth as hunting for sport. They like to come to Earth and hunt humans. They can go invisible. They can see in infrared. So hiding from these things is a challenge, and killing them is near impossible. Only Arnold can really do it. Danny Glover did it once.
But, yeah, around that era, I think I was busy watching more of the Tom Cruise-type movies and not so much the Arnold movies.
It was a year after Top Gun.
Yeah.
But so that's what predators do. They go places, and they hunt for sport. And they're not necessarily here this time for that purpose. There is another purpose. I'm not going to say it's worthwhile. It's ridiculous. It doesn't add up, but it's a terrible movie.
Okay.
But I love it how you always see these movies and talk about these movies that no one's ever going to see. And I finally talk about a movie that a lot of people will see.
Okay.
And you're
fair enough. And I mean, Jacob Tremblay, I think, has become, it's just this generation's go-to kid actor for any kind of role that really requires transformation and being able to embody a different kind of character. And so I will go out on a limb here and expect that he probably is still very good,
even if
the movie is bad.
The problem, and there's a bigger problem with this movie, and it's not the plot. It's the scandal. There's scandal attached to The Predator. Shane Black hired his buddy, his friend, to star in a very, very bit part, like 10 seconds long. Later on, Olivia Munn found out this guy was a convicted sex offender.
I did hear that story.
So when she found out about that, she went to the studio and she went to Shane Black. She said, remove him from the movie. Cut him from the movie. It wouldn't even hurt it. He's only in it for like 10 seconds. They balked. They didn't do it.
They didn't.
So she went on social media and said, hey, everybody, Shane Black cast his buddy, a convicted child sex offender. Get angry, get mad. Let's cut him from the movie. And none of her male co-stars backed her up.
Wow.
Initially. Once social media got a hold of them and said, what are you doing? They all suddenly found their opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Boyd Holbrook, Keegan-Michael Key. They're like, oh, no, I was with you all along, Olivia. Sorry that it felt like we left you out there to dry.
Mm-hmm.
This exploded the week of its release. So it's almost a good thing that people won't be talking about the plot.
So they left him in. So he's still in.
No, he's not. They cut him out.
So you saw a version. You know what that scene is. That was.
I don't know what the scene is. I don't even know who it is. But I noticed that yes, they did cut him out of the movie. He's not in the movie.
Okay.
And I assume he still remains on sex offender lists. But way to go, Shane.
One more reason not to bother seeing it.
The more intriguing wide release of the week is something we both saw. It's called A Simple Favor, and I called it Doris Day and Marlena Dietrich Day Drink Together and Share Secrets.
Yeah, I think that's a very Charlie kind of stretch on a description there.
What favor is Blake Lively asking Anna Sweet, Anna Kendrick, to do?
I'm trying to remember. I believe she was just simply asking her to watch her son. The two women both have sons of the same age, and they become sort of playmates. And so they exchange, have play dates over at each other's houses. And so I believe the Blake Lively character asks the Anna Kendrick character to just keep an eye on her son, watch her son until she gets back from a business trip.
Well, what happens to her?
She disappears.
Whoa.
She just plain old disappears.
Mystery.
And so, then basically what happens is sweet goody two-shoes mommy Anna Kendrick, who's a video blogger, shares this news with her mommy base of viewers. And so that's sort of the device that's used to kind of move this story along a bit, but
it was a dark comedy. It was kind of funny.
It's a twisty crime thriller that goes dark, but never in that dark of a way. So I think what keeps you engaged and why a lot of people will still kind of enjoy this movie is that it never gets like oppressive, like a lot of twisty crime thrillers do. And that's because Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively, everybody likes at least one or the other, if not both. And so that's what this movie hangs its hat on, is the relationship, is these two characters kind of playing off of each other and their different characteristics, and they're just fun to watch. And the surprise, it's Henry Golding, who just showed up out of the blue over the past 2 months as the boyfriend in Crazy Rich Asians, is the husband here of the Blake Lively character. And, you know, it's just interesting that he's managed, he comes out of nowhere and he's in two films within 2 months. And he's not by any means the star of this film, or, you know,
not remotely,
but he holds his own. And so, you know, I think he kind of will keep his momentum going, but this movie won't be as nearly as popular and successful as Crazy Rich Asians, but it's still entertaining.
Well, the majority of A Simple Favor is a whodunit. Anna Kendrick she's Nancy Drew. She wants to find who she says is her best friend, even though they've only known each other for a couple of weeks, and over those couple of weeks, it was really just some afternoons. And that's the best part of the film, when Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively are on the couch together, enjoying the world's driest martinis. They're really good together, one-on-one, these tete-a-tetes, if you will. Directed by Paul Figg. We know him not as a tense, suspenseful, dramatic director. He's a comedy guy. Mm-hmm. Specifically, a Melissa McCarthy comedy guy. He did Bridesmaids. He did The Heat. He remade Ghostbusters. He did Spy. This is Paul Figg's thing.
Paul Figg.
Is it Figg? I thought it was Figg.
I looked it up. He said Figg.
Figg?
Figg.
I know him from Freaks and Geeks. He co-created that's one of the best television series of all time, which launched the careers of Seth Rogen, James Franco, and I always forget the other one. He was in How I Met Your Mother.
Oh.
You know what I mean? He was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, I know totally what I mean?
You can see him.
Yeah.
I can see him. And I always forget his name. Anyways. This, and it works. He's good. He can do drama. This film reminded me of Gone Girl. This film reminded me of Girl on the Train. You're right. It's not as dark as those. There's a strain of humor that those two movies lacked. But it's in the genre, and it's going to be compared to Gone Girl, and it's not as good as Gone Girl. It's not its fault. It's also, you can tell it's based on a book, because it's stuffed full of plot and story. There's so much going on. They must have included everything from the book, and it was only released in March of last year. Gone Girl made so much money that they're looking for, I think, books like it and just greenlighting it, which I believe happened in this case.
Yeah, and I suppose if you've actually read the book by D'Arcy Bell, you might... Not
Jason Segel.
Jason Segel. Yes, I could see him. Very good. But if you read the book, you're not going to be as surprised by just being sort of immersed in the bizarro twists and turns that this story takes.
Did it feel stuffed to you?
There's
a lot going on.
A lot going on, but I think it probably needed to all be in there. And it wasn't an overly long film.
It wasn't?
I don't remember feeling that it was long.
I think it was a little under two hours.
Yeah, maybe. So I think it...
It's so busy, though.
But it might have been one of those scenarios, though, where you know how you felt with Juliet Naked, that you felt that there was so much more in the book
and
that the film didn't capture it? Well, they might have felt an obligation, and there might have been an easier way for them to figure out how to include as much from the book as they could.
Well, I'm throwing a flag on this adapted screenplay. It's rushed. I didn't believe what happens between Anna Kendrick and Henry Golding.
Oh, yeah.
Stephanie and Sean. They're consoling each other. Emily's gone. Blake Lively. Where'd she go? Maybe she's dead. They find a body. We don't know whose body it is. And they grow close. I didn't believe a word of it.
Yeah,
I didn't believe it
no,
at all.
I agree. I didn't buy that much into this sudden romance, if it is such a thing, in this film. And I do, yeah, there were definitely a lot of preposterous moments and plot points, but that didn't prevent it. I mean, to me, this is a good rental, or, you know, if you're just looking for that kind of just a good solid drama and you don't want to watch The Predator and you shouldn't, then this provides and you've already seen Crazy Rich Asians, so you've gotten a little bit of Henry Golding there, then you know, this one's good. I mean, like, I think my brother's obsessed with Blake Lively.
Well, this genre is very popular, so I think it's really for those people that was like, man, Gone Girl blew my mind. Yeah. Girl on the Train sort of blew my mind. This is not as good as those.
It's not. It's not as good as those, but it's it works strictly because of Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. Take those two out of the mix, I'm not sure another pair of actresses could have necessarily pulled it off as well. But because they each have their likability factor and their fan bases, I think, to me, Anna Kendrick's role in this vaguely reminded me of a small film called Mr. Right that nobody seems to have seen, but it was really very good and quirky, and it starred Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell.
I lasted 20 minutes for that film.
And it was so good and weird. It was weird good, and this one was sort of the same.
You don't like weird good. I like weird good.
But sometimes I like weird good. If it works, and again, depending on who's in it, and I think I just liked Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell in that one, and in this one, the Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively dynamic works. And so every once in a while, when there is a weird, good, quirky, good kind of flick, then it's worth pointing out. I would say go watch Mr. Right first and then you can go and watch this one and realize that it's not that big of a departure of a role for Anna Kendrick.
I'm sticking to my guns that if this was made in the 50s, it would star Doris Day and Marlena Dietrich, even though Marlena Dietrich would be a little old for it. Not Doris. That'd be the next film is also a wide release, but not as wide, about 1,000 or two less theaters. And I didn't see it because, I don't know, I just couldn't handle it. But you went to go see.
Like, I'm like, you could have seen
I
it.
I could have seen it, but
you abandoned me. Left me with just a few press people at the screening.
You went to go see, based on a true story now, Matthew McConaughey, who was also, I remember, based on a true story like a year and a half ago in Gold.
Mm-hmm.
You went to see White Boy Rick.
White Boy Rick.
Why? Is there a reason why it's called White Boy Rick?
It's called White Boy Rick because there's this kid named Rick who's a white boy. And he sort of infiltrates. He becomes an informant with this drug dealing group of guys, a gang of sorts. And they refer to him as, White Boy Rick.
So Donnie Brasco?
So it's this kid, Richie Merritt, who is from not far from here, Dundalk High School outside Baltimore.
Not a place you want to go.
And has never acted before. And this was his first role ever. And he was like plucked from obscurity because they thought
Dundalk.
He could.
We watched a movie already this year from Dundalk.
And it's
Soller's
that
Point.
Same, right. And so I think it was that intention of here's this kid, you're supposed to try and, feel like he could truly be this, it's set in 1980s Detroit at the height of like the war on drugs. And so, it's this true story about this kid and his father, played by Matthew McConaughey, who's like this blue collar guy who's trying hard to do right by his kids, but failing miserably and is a single dad. And he isn't able to stop things from going a little out of control when his kid becomes this undercover informant for the FBI and the cops. And then he gets abandoned by the police, abandoned by the feds, and ends up getting sentenced to life in prison. True story. This guy served like 30 years. I think he was paroled last year. And so to me, the fact that it's based on this true story, it just makes you go, wow, be really careful about letting the feds rope you into becoming a confidential informant because you just might be left hung out to dry. But it's Matthew McConaughey's good. It's sort of one of those gritty types of films that you've seen before with the war on drug stuff and the the informants and the and just you know, the dad has a good heart, but he's always screwing up, and I don't know, you wouldn't it would have been interesting if you'd seen it, because I didn't get any, as you would call them, there were no feels.
I'm not feeling it.
And so there were no feels to me. As interesting as the story was, I felt that this kid who had never acted before, being up against Matthew McConaughey, I felt that he was in many cases overacting. And so I wasn't buying into this performance. And so I think it might have honestly suffered by having somebody with absolutely zero acting experience taking on this role. So, you know, we've been seeing so many gritty Detroit movies lately.
Even one called Detroit.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh, another Detroit-based movie. Reminded me a little bit, if I had to compare it to something, I would probably compare it to the Tom Cruise movie we saw a year or two
American Made.
He was a pilot and a CIA informant who ran drugs for the Medellin cartel and, you know, ends up getting busted. And so it was that kind of a film.
Nothing about what you have said makes me want to remotely ever watch this movie.
It's not bad, but there really is very little reason to go and see it. It's not going to break through. It's not an awards caliber movie. It's just there, and it's an interesting story that is another one of those, oh my gosh, this actually really happened, and that's fascinating to kind of think about how this kid, this teenager, got led astray and just, you know, just got roped into this life and couldn't escape it. And so I wanted to like it more. I'm glad I saw it just so that I could check it off the list and know that I have seen it. But you're not missing anything at all by not going to see this one.
This is actually good news, because you're saving our audience 2 hours so they can go to see our next film instead.
I disagree.
I have seen thousands upon thousands of movies, and I don't think I have ever seen one from Zambia. I think it's my first Zambian film.
I'm right there with you. I don't think I've seen any other films from Zambia either.
It's actually so good that it is the Great Britain's entry into next year's Oscars. Every country gets to nominate one film for the best foreign film category. They're saying, pick us, because I Am Not a Witch is our best movie.
No.
And it's really good, so I can see where they're coming from. Zambia, apparently, is comfortable with having witches. They have witches, mostly old women. In fact, almost exclusively old women, and they're tied up with ribbons, and they go out to the fields to, you know, help farmers and do odd jobs around the town.
They're tethered to ribbons.
They could technically cut the ribbon, but if they do, they're told they will turn into a goat. So make your choice. Tether yourself to the ribbon or turn into a goat. And I'm not going to call him the mayor. He's not the mayor. The fixer. The town fixer. The town sleazeball gets a call one day from a cop. The cop says, hey, we have an accused witch here at the station. Well, why are you calling me? That's nothing new.
An 8-year-old.
She's not denying it, sir. Because if you're accused of being a witch, what's the first thing you do? I'm not a witch. Our girl here actually never says that. She never says she's a witch, but she never says she's not a witch. She barely says anything at all. They give her a name, because she never says she has a name. They call her Shula. Little Shula is not denying she's a witch. And usually witches don't come in the package of 8-year-old girls who've never been to school. We don't know where Shula is coming from.
Wearing a hashtag booty call shirt that's in tatters.
We don't know where her parents are, most likely dead, but we don't know. We don't know where she's from. Is she from Zambia? I guess. She kind of speaks the language. But they include her, they attach her to a ribbon, and they bring her to the witch colony, and she becomes one of them. And then our fixer guy, our sleazeball, realizes he's kind of got a moneymaker on his hands. People will pay to use this 8-year-old's witchcraft. He uses her as a judge to determine who the guilty party is of stealing. He uses her to go on television and sell eggs. Well, I just love this movie for its look. I believe it is stunning. This movie is just stunning to watch, stunning to look at. I love the story. I love the little girl. I love everything about I Am Not a Witch.
This is one of those ones where we just differ on the kinds of films that we just like. And this is strictly an art house international film. And it will do very well among the art house international film genre lovers. And they will embrace it. I just didn't really care for it. I mean, it's, you know, I get it. It's trying to be allegorical about them, you know, social justice and the role of women in this society. And I just didn't like it. I don't hate it, but I watched it through. It's not like one of those ones where I just tune out after 20 minutes. I just could not embrace it. I just, the whole thing.
Did you feel for the girl? Was there empathy involved?
Sure. I mean, there's some empathy, but then, you know, you're kind of like, where's this story going? And what's the final point?
Did you recognize it as the social satire it may have been trying to be?
Yes, I did. I just did. I absolutely recognized it as the social satire it was trying to be. I just, you know, it straddles this line of comedy and tragedy. And I just didn't particularly like it.
How you say it is going to be for that art house crowd that thrives on these sort of come out of nowhere movies. I wouldn't be surprised to see it get nominated for a Best Foreign Film Oscar. This has got a lot of buzz attached to it, but not enough buzz where it's playing a major Washington, D.C. theater. It's not even playing a Landmark theater like Bethesda Row or E Street. It's at the Avalon, which is, granted, has its fair share of loyal patrons, but it is out of the way.
And for, it's one of those ones where it is this director's debut, and so it's sort of one of these, you know, an up-and-coming filmmaker who takes a very unique perspective on filmmaking. And I know you love that, and experimental films and things that are just a little more out
there.
Because
I can honestly say I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like this movie.
I Am Not a Witch. I agree. I've never seen anything quite like it when somebody is sort of saying, you know, you have a choice. Either admit you're a witch or you're going to turn into a goat. Okay.
Hey, if you're an 8-year-old, you're going to believe that.
But it's not 8-year-olds. It's all, they're all told that.
I have my suspicions about those older women. I think they've been cast off. They have no family. And they're like, well, what else? You know, this is kind of a good gig for an old lady in Zambia. Because they're taken care of.
Well, and I think they did use, I believe they used a lot of locals. And even this girl was, I think, plucked from obscurity, just like Rick was in White Boy Rick. To play this role. I think it was somebody else who had really never had an acting role before. And so, yes, it is a different kind of movie, but it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea at all. And so I'm just saying that if I had to choose, I liked watching White Boy Rick just as much as I liked watching I Am Not a Witch. But you didn't see White Boy Rick.
Well, I love the contrast of what we're about to talk about. So I love art house foreign films. I just do. They hit me. You love cute. You love cute. And there's
good
probably
cute. It's got to be good cute.
There's nothing cuter. There's nothing good cuter than the next documentary we're going to talk about called Pick Up the Litter, which was at the AFI Film Festival. Neither of us saw it there, but it now has distribution, and people are talking about Pick Up the Litter because it's so cute. Hannah, why?
It's not just cute.
Is Pick Up the Litter so cute?
Because how can you go wrong with 80 minutes of watching Puppies with a Purpose?
Because it's boring.
It is not boring. You actually are seeing from the moment this litter of labs are born.
They look like little rats.
You're seeing these, what was it, five? I think five of them.
Yeah.
These five dogs, you see them born. They're part of this breeding program to breed dogs that will, if they pass muster, will become guide dogs for the blind. And so this film crew followed these dogs from their birth for like 2.5 years to see what happens, how they end up getting trained and fostered and whether or not they wash out of the program, and you meet the people that are waiting to get the blind people that are waiting to get guide dogs. And it's just like watching this like reality competition show of who's going to be the pick of the litter, you know, which of these five pups is going to make it and become a guide dog for the blind.
It sounds as riveting as it is.
Versus the ones that are going, I mean, I love, they use terms like...
the career changed.
If you wash out of the program, as a dog, you are career changed. Others are chosen to become breeders. Others are basically adopted into other families.
They become pets.
Yeah. So it's just different. I mean, it's a story we've never really been able to kind of see that.
But
whole...
How did I know that you were going to love this movie?
I didn't love it. I didn't love it. I liked it. So I think you assumed I would love it, but I wanted to see it. I would never assume that you needed to see it on a big screen. This is a rental or a streaming video for dog lovers to watch. It really is a very interesting story. I mean, to actually see this, and this is what documentaries are supposed to do. It's not just watching cute puppies. You are actually seeing every step of the way how these five puppies, all named with a P, so there's Patriot, Potomac, Primrose, Poppet, and Phil, and you're waiting to find out, you know, which ones are going to make it. You meet these people that invest so much in training them, and even the people who are training them don't always make the cut. Like a couple of times, the dogs are transitioned out of one foster home and into another for a different kind of training. And so there's so much that really goes into creating, to making sure. I mean, these dogs have to be a very special breed in order to protect and guide the blind and, or, you know, visually impaired people who need that kind of assistance. And so it's heartwarming. So it's not like a great documentary. It's a very heartwarming documentary.
Yeah, it's, you know, I didn't know about it, and now that I know about it, I was like, okay, that's interesting. That could have been a good 8-minute segment on 60 Minutes, I suppose. You know,
but that's just it. I mean, they are taking the time, the idea that they actually are there for the birth of these.
Well, documentaries
puppies.
Do that. Yes, I've seen documentaries over longer periods of time.
This was 120 shooting days.
So what?
To create this documentary, a lot of documentaries don't. Aren't able to take that kind of
time. How long
time.
Was Boyhood? That wasn't even a documentary.
They were saying, so the two directors of this film, they also directed things like Bat Kid and Theory of Obscurity. I don't know if you ever saw that one. Bat Kid Begins. And so Dana Nachman and Don Hardy, who directed this, they were saying that they shot 120 shooting days was about three times the number of shoots of any of their four other feature docs. So,
well, Bat Kid took place in a day.
But that's just it. I mean, this is unusual to be able to track for as long as they did and just create this sweet story and to really follow all five of these puppies and see what happens to them. It's sweet and inspiring, and so that's what it is. It's not, you know, do I think it's on par or better than a documentary like Mr. Rogers? No, it's just a nice small documentary. I would have been just as fine seeing it as one of the 20. I would have liked it to have seen it at AFI Docs, but I would not have voted it up above any of the other documentaries.
Well, it's better than the bottom like three I saw at AFI. So it's not the worst, but it's just so
it's just a
it's just a, just a that's such because, a fluffy
subject. You are just too...
Subject.
You're a sourpuss.
I didn't... I'm glad to see how much effort goes into creating a guide dog and why some fail.
You are
and
heartless.
And why some make it.
You are heartless.
But it
how
just
you
didn't...
Cannot...
How can you like this more than I am not a witch just
oh my
baffles
gosh.
Me.
Easily.
It blows
easily.
My mind.
So yes, Pick of the Litter would be my pick over I Am Not a Witch.
I Am Not a Witch, which is the best film this week.
And I can guarantee you that 95% of my friends would agree with me that they would prefer to watch Pick of the Litter, especially the dog owners and the dog lovers.
What about cat lovers?
Cat
they
lovers,
like I Am Not a Witch?
You know, even cat lovers might like Pick of the Litter. Well, maybe, you know, witches generally have cats versus dogs.
Pick of the Litter is better than The Predator.
this is just, it's one of those middle of the road ones that comes along that you just go, it was cute and interesting.
Yes, cute. It was.
And,
it was very cute.
But also interesting and an interesting story. You're right. It probably could have been a good 15-minute segment on CBS Sunday morning. I could see that happening. But, you know, for dog lovers, seeing the full 80 minutes and getting the payoff that they get for seeing what happens to these individual dogs and the people around them, they're going to enjoy it. But it's a rental. It's not, I would not pay $15 to go see it in a theater.
It's a Netflixer.
It's a Netflixer, but it's a cute Netflixer for dog people. So the dog people out there could appreciate it. And the sourpuss Charlies out there can just go and pet their cat.
I'm telling you, I Am Not a Witch. It's where it's at. All right. Okay, we did it. I mean, we fought today. It was good.
Wait,
sometimes
but you
we
know
don't
what?
Fight.
We also should mention the one that we did see that we didn't have a chance to talk about
last
week.
Well, we will briefly plug that we did see
Peppermint.
A Star is Born.
I thought we were
gonna
say no. I was going to talk really quickly first about Peppermint, which was the... Jennifer Garner action flick that kind of came and went. That was a
and it's tough to talk about because we saw it 10 days ago and already forgot everything about it because
yeah.
It's a female death wish.
It's a female death wish. And so, yeah. But the tie in there is Jennifer Garner as the star of Alias, one of her co-stars who was not so big back at the time in 2001 to 2006 when Alias was on, is Bradley Cooper. And tell us about seeing Bradley Cooper this week.
Bradley Cooper, I didn't know he was capable of what he has pulled off with the fourth iteration of A Star is Born. This is the fourth time Hollywood has now made this movie. Bradley Cooper directed it. He co-wrote and directed this movie. His first time directing, and he got Lady Gaga to be his opposite. And it's a fascinating, fascinating, very powerful film. I'm not going to say it's my favorite, but I'm not going to really get into critiquing it right now either. It's a regular film. There's no explosions. There's nothing particularly visual effects about it, but it's one of those, it's so weird. I would say see it in a theater with a
Dolby,
big old sound
big screen
system.
And Dolby sound, which the studios insisted we see it. In a theater with Dolby sound.
I was
and then
shocked at how loud
why.
It was. It might be one of the loudest movies I've ever heard in my life.
I needed earplugs for the first minute or two.
It was loud.
For sure. It was very loud. But yeah, we won't talk about the review at this point, but we did get to see Bradley Cooper do a Q&A in Georgetown, which was, I didn't even realize he went to Georgetown, so it was he was in his old stomping grounds.
Yeah, he was. He's a Georgetown alum. He transferred from Villanova, I guess, because he really wanted to go there. And he was kind enough to bring his film to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
and talk to a group of critics for like 20 minutes afterwards.
Yeah, and we learned some really interesting stuff. I mean, to hear that he shot this film in like 47 days, all the music was shot live, which is amazing. And he can sing. The boy can sing. And he even throws in for Alias fans. There are a few cameos with some old Alias characters in
That's
there.
That's right. I did see a couple of those pop up.
Yeah.
And I laughed a little bit when it's like, man, he's talking so low. He sounds like Sam Elliott. And who walks on the screen? Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I see what you did.
It was very strange to hear him talk in such a low voice.
And Lady Gaga, she's been in some movies before, but this is a different level of acting than she's ever done. She pulls it off. You're going to hear both of their names and this movie all talked about for like 13 nominations for Academy Awards. I wonder if it'll have the legs.
I think it will. And how it will figure out which songs can be nominated for Best Original Song without canceling each other out. Because there are actually several to choose from, and this is going to be a very popular soundtrack. That's my prediction right now, that soundtrack's going to kill. And so, yeah, it was really the first of those where you just went, award season.
Mm-hmm. This was the first one to really kick it off.
Whereas another one we'll talk about next week that I just saw was Life Itself by the maker of This Is Us.
Which will not be mentioned for Oscars.
So it won't be mentioned for Oscars.
In fact, I think it has 8% on the tomato meter.
But it has a higher percentage of people who are of the audience.
Are you really going to defend that movie? I can't wait.
So I'll defend it to some degree. But yeah, for This Is Us fans, they'll want to hear about life itself and whether it's any good. And so, yeah, it's Fahrenheit 11-9 we have coming up.
I don't even know if we'll get a chance to see that.
Michael Moore's
in town on Monday. Yeah. I can't go, so I hope you do take good notes.
Oh, no, I've already seen it, so I'm not going to the
movie. Oh, well, you're going to have to qualify that.
I saw a rough cut.
There it is. All right.
But, I didn't realize you weren't going.
No, I can't go.
Oh,
I have a significant other who works, who works late at night sometimes.
Be a good dad. You can leave the 5-year-old by himself, can't you?
All right, very quick wrap up. Oh, man, where did we even start? The Predator. Man, that movie stinks. It's not as bad as Kin from like 3 weeks ago, but it's a pretty stupid movie. This is stupid.
I never saw him before, and I will never see this one either.
A Simple Favor. Huh.
You know, it's oddly entertaining with the emphasis on the odd.
Anna Kendrick's looking good.
And so is Blake Lively.
White Boy Rick,
it's right up there with Gold.
That's pretty down there, in fact. It's right down there with Gold.
So I would put it just slightly below that American Made. American Made was a little better than this one. Not one that you really have to rush out and see.
I Am Not a Witch is the week's best film by far.
If you're Charlie.
Pick of the litter?
A cute documentary. It is what it is. You can't go wrong with five adorable labs who have a purpose to help the blind. I mean, come on, Charlie.
You gotta help the blind. All right, thank you very much for listening to the Cinema Clash. I think we've given you enough reasons to stick around for next week. So thanks for listening.
Take care.
Okay. Yeah, I usually give you the chance to reintroduce yourself.
I know, but
you
usually sign
off. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
Let's try it again. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Puchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend at RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.